Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Happy 2-year anniversary of this podcast.
I can't believe it's been 2 years.
It has been exactly 2 years this Saturday when we put out our first episode with Alchemist.
Out in L.A.
We taped it in L.A. And, you know, we originally sold this podcast, as everyone knows, as a dinner party style conversation. And the network at the time put out a press release that said dinner party. And subsequently, we cooked for... I don't know, like a dozen or so episodes thereafter.
Which, you know, like it's nice to have people over to your home, and it's nice to talk to them, it's nice to cook for them, but maybe not to do all those things at the same time.
And especially when, like, you know, the stove is right behind the guest.
And our apartment is really hot.
We kept going, and we're 120 episodes in, and I think the thing that I'm most proud of throughout this whole process is that we found... a niche. And now, look, we've had Charlie Wilson on, we've had Jadakiss on, we've had Angie Martinez on, Lil Uzi Vert. Fine, big guests who were there to promote something. But what we figured out, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, where we really do very well is when we have guests that are insiders, that are behind-the-scenes people, that we can talk about industry stuff and teach our audience about things that go on.
Yeah, but it's not only our audience. Like you and I both genuinely love, you know, learning about all of these people and how they got to where they are today, but also, like, the behind-the-scenes shit that we used to read in XXL or any of these places.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what we love.
Yeah. And we're thrilled to have shared it with you guys for 2 years, and we'll keep going as long as you guys listen. And also, thank you guys for everybody who's supporting us during this very special week, not just because it's 2 years of the podcast, but also...
because it's been 3 years of the album.
We have an album that's going to be in your digital stores this Friday, May 26th. It's called Teddy Bear Fresh. And when you talk about dreams, I mean... we performed on a stage with Just Blaze as our DJ, with Freeway on stage with us. We performed with Bun B, with Smoke Dizza, with Clark Kent. We performed at Bonnaroo. Landmark moments in our lives. This is...
it's a milestone. Like, this is a real body of work. Like, we put in the work... going up to Westchester to Greg Mayo's studio.
And shout out to Greg. If we haven't said it enough... Greg is the third partner in It's the Real. He's the bigs to our, you know, Jay-Z and Dame. Whoever you want to play, we'll play.
Right.
But Greg, who produces all of our music and has, and he's been our best friend since we were very young kids. We put together a project that we're super proud of because it sounds so legitimate. It's got amazing replay value, and we put so much work into our lyrics, into our themes, and into getting the right guest verses, right? Like, what are you most proud of with this project?
I'm most proud of... I think that, like, we've got probably some of the best punchlines out right now.
So, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but we went down to Atlanta, and we recorded this podcast with Killer Mike, and one thing we didn't get to mention was... that we do find great influence from a Fabolous or a Kanye in terms of punchlines and having them be, you know, authentic and legitimate.
But
and
no, just like clever.
Yeah.
We want to be as clever and as, like, you know, there are certain jokes that we liked writing for sketches. There are certain jokes we liked writing for TV shows. But I think that there's certain things that just work in as bars.
And by the way, you know, we definitely have our own style, and I think that style does translate through the sketches and the TV stuff and interviews and in the music. I would say I'm most proud of the fact that the three of us worked together when we didn't have any money, and that we continue to work when we have a little money, and we make stuff that we love. And that's the best part of this. You know, we get compliments, which is awesome, and we get hate, which you try to let just, like, you know, slide off you, and we stay somewhere in the middle because we love our product. We think it's great. We think there's an audience out for it, and that's why we're putting it on all the streaming services, on iTunes, because this is something that, you know, we think has legs and is a real boy, so to speak, you know? So Yeah, we worked so hard to get these verses, and one of the highest compliments came from Michael Christmas and Tunji Ige, who told us that they wouldn't have gotten on the songs if they weren't great.
And, you know, we didn't know them at the time. Like, we had reached out. There was interest of getting them on the podcast at some point, but we didn't know them. We were just fans of their music, and we asked if they would be on ours. There's always this idea that commenters seem to have of, like, how people clear guest verses, and that you know, if you have lots of money, then that's how it happens. And right. It's like, we have no money. So that, you know, gets thrown out the window.
Right.
This was through personal relationships. This was through, you know, sending songs to people and being like, I hope that you fuck with it. Please get on it.
Yeah.
And people did.
And, you know, it's not just anybody's. We weren't just like throwing this out there to every rapper who exists. This was... We worked at getting Bun B on a song that we wanted Bun B on.
That's an easy one, because Bun B is like a friend.
Right, but we worked at getting Jazz Cartier on a song that made sense for him. And the same goes for everybody that we had. And we think you guys will really fuck with it.
We think that there is a space for our music. The sense of humor, we think that it will definitely translate. If you ever read blogs, or if you ever loved rap, and you were like, you know, you looked for those friends that you could talk about rap with. Like, that's where we fit in.
This is that. You guys will recognize a lot of the tropes that we deal with.
It's all inside jokes.
It's inside jokes. You guys will really fuck with the bars. Let us know what you like. And let us know which song you think is really, like, the next one up. We have an idea. But we want to hear what you guys think. Go on Spotify this Friday and press play. And hopefully you guys enjoy it. And please... let us know what you think. It'll be on all the streaming services.
Yes.
So anybody out there who insists, you know, that it'll be on Google Play, it will be. And that's Spotify, Google Play. You can download it from iTunes. That's a really cool thing, too. The people who have hit us up and said they are pre-ordering it, and they show us the receipts, because if you pre-order it, you can have it, obviously, and play it at any time, and you own it. But also, the higher it gets on the charts, the more exposure it gets to people who may not know about It's the Real. Shouts to Jeff. Shouts to Greg. Shouts to myself.
Shouts to you.
For putting together something that is a dream come true. Teddy Bear Fresh is coming out on We the Best Empire this Friday, May 26th.
We had to do something different because we weren't going to just talk about ourselves for an hour and a half for this podcast.
No, like, just 10 minutes.
Yeah, just 10 minutes. We couldn't do an hour and a half. We had to get somebody else to interview us, and we asked Killer Mike to do it. And so we flew down to Atlanta this weekend.
Top secret mission.
And we got some very mid barbecue down in Atlanta. Atlanta's not known for its barbecue, yeah. So we had some decent
Some people
stuff.
Out there suggested where to go. We went to a place. It was okay.
It was okay. But we spent time with Killer Mike and his wife, Shay.
Yeah, shout out to them. Shout out to them for having us at their house, because Mike had a leg injury that didn't let him get to the
barbershop that we were supposed to. Killer Mike owns a couple of barbershops down in Atlanta, the Graffiti Swag Shop.
Shout out to everyone who works there. And there's, I think, two or three locations.
Yeah.
Soon to be more.
Yeah.
Go there and get your hair cut.
Yeah.
But we went to Mike's house. We had a wonderful conversation. I think it goes in a lot of important places. You guys learn stuff about us.
We learn stuff about him.
We do. And it's, you know, obviously, you know you're going to get funny from it. So it's a really fun conversation. I think it clocks in about an hour and a half, somewhere around there. And
he shouts out our mom.
Honestly, the conversation could have gone on for way longer.
And it did, off mic.
And we look forward to having Mike come up here to talk about his journey. You know, we talk about 2 Chainz a lot, and Mike is a personal friend.
Yeah.
But I'm saying on the podcast we talk about 2 Chainz a lot.
No, I know.
But Mike's got a story that's equally as fascinating, and we look forward to having him on the podcast to talk about that story as well. Thanks again to Killer Mike. Thanks to everyone down in Atlanta who showed us that real Southern hospitality. That is a real thing.
That is so real.
Shout out to everyone in Atlanta. We'll be back soon. And
can we also say that we hung out with hip-hop?
We hung out with hip-hop.
We hung out with hip-hop. That's it.
Shout out to hip-hop. That's our guy. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And again, Teddy Bear Fresh, the album.
The movement.
It's a real album.
Yeah, real boy.
Is everywhere. May 26th. Go check that out. Waco, the single is out right now. Jeff. When do you want to get into this podcast?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Number One with a Bullet, a.k.a. Rod Strickland.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Only One in First Class, a.k.a. Homeschooler.
Hey, I'm Killer Mike, and I'm glad they defined which one was fucking which.
Yeah, this is a waste of time, but it's the real. We're down here in Atlanta with Killer Mike.
In his house.
In his house.
In my house.
And this is your podcast from here on out. So, first of all, thank you for doing this.
Man, Eric and Jeff, thank you guys for coming. My wife is definitely wondering who are the two Jewish men that are loud in our kitchen right now.
We're here to sell insurance.
So, yeah, exactly.
Shalom to the tribe worldwide, man. I hope everybody's okay out there, man. Thanks for coming to my house. We were supposed to do this in my barbershop, interestingly enough, same barbershop where another Jewish friend of mine, Bernie Sanders, was interviewed. Yeah. And
has Bernie been here?
No, he hasn't been here yet.
So we're better, you know, friends than Bernie Sanders.
Right now, yeah. You done top the OG. But I'm fat, and people have, my wife in particular, has been making me work out, so I tricked my knee some kind of way, so I got to go get an MRI in a couple of days.
But shout out to your barbershop.
Yeah, Swag Shop, man, the Shave, Wash, and Groom Shop. We have one in downtown Atlanta, one on Southside. We have one we're building in the West End, and we have another surprise one coming this summer. It's going to shock the shit out of people, so.
Is it in our neighborhood?
We'll be in New York soon. Yeah. We're interviewing hipster barbers as we speak.
Yo, I need a good barber. My barber sucks.
You got to come see Natalie or T down at the Swag Shop. Man.
Got you.
Man, thank you guys for coming to my home. Just because in the South, when you invite people to your home, it means you trust them. You don't think you have to kill them. So, you know, thanks for making a trustworthy list.
No, thank you. Thank you for having us.
So you guys are, this is your 10th year in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, this is, I didn't, me and, like, I'm in a group called Run the Jewels, for those who don't know, I'm one
you
half
are?
Of Run the Jewels, yeah.
Today it's Run the Jews.
Yeah. I always let the Jewish people say that. I never tread on. I took me about 10 years to get my footing in rap and kind of, become an overnight sensation, and this is you guys' 10th year, so my homie told me you're not a real band until you've been doing it 10 years. How does it feel to be a real band, guys?
I just feel old. Like, don't you?
Honestly, I feel more relevant than we've ever been before. I don't know if that's just, like, the internet or whether that's, like, people, you know, just know us more now. But it feels good that we're still around because a lot of our contemporaries from 10 years ago aren't.
Are out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know how fast the internet moves. It just feels, like, nice. And especially, like, in a career like ours where we've done a whole bunch of different things, we didn't just stick to one thing. We could have been doing sketches for our whole career.
Yeah.
But we didn't want to be stuck in that niche, you know?
Yeah, it's always better when you voluntarily quit a job.
Right, we wanted to burn every bridge on our way out. So
who loved rap first?
Eric, because he's older. That's not like a sellout move. Like you liked it first.
I actually did.
What year? Who was it?
Oh, I mean, look,
it was 1975.
Yeah, I know,
he was
right?
There for Quark.
Yeah.
Yo, we had a meeting on to BET. BET called us in for a meeting in like 2010, maybe.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, we were doing our sketches and they were like really interested in bringing us in to see maybe if there was a possibility of us working together.
Work.
Yeah,
BET, which is crazy.
I know. First of all, like we walked in and all these interns were like, it's the reals here. And we're like,
because
oh.
our sketches were like popping at the time.
Yeah. And the woman that we met with, who was like head of development at the time, said, why do you think you're allowed to comment on my culture? And we were like, well, good starting question. Like, And what we should have said was like, we've worked with, you know, these number of people, we're a part of the everyday culture.
Yeah, we do our homework.
Right.
You know, it's not like, you know, just like, this is like a great way to make money or something.
But instead, I said, oh, well, you know, we've been listening to rap since Arrested Development.
And she goes, I love that show. And we were like, I also love that show. That's not what we're talking about.
We're talking about the band.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, I would have said to any BET executive that wasn't one of the interns that knew you,
yes,
who the fuck said hip-hop is BET's culture?
Wow.
You know, I mean, no disrespect.
Right.
But like, BET, when rap first kind of broke, BET didn't give a fuck about rap.
Right.
BET gave a damn about My Mama's Gospel.
Yes.
And R&B. Shouts out to Donnie Simpson.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, it's amazed me how like people just assume just because they're black, it's their culture. Culture,
yeah, yeah,
which it is, you know, it comes out of that, but hip hop's really born out of a culture of poor kids in the Bronx,
yeah,
of many different, you know, primarily black, but you know, the Spanish kids are there, the poor white kids are there, so they're culturally, I think you guys could have asserted that we're from New York, bitch. No. I didn't say that.
we did not get the job.
Yeah. That's a shame. BET's lost, man.
No, it's all good. But here we are 10 years later. When did I start listening to hip hop? You know, I mean, the truth is probably MC Hammer, like, back then,
thank
you know?
Thank you for that truth.
And that meant something to me back then. And
one of the greatest compliments I ever got.
Yeah.
David Letterman, and the next day on Twitter, MC Hammer complimented me as a performer.
That's awesome.
I could have cried like a bitch. Because if you've ever seen a Hammer show, it's easy to understand why people liked Hammer.
Yeah.
You know, and then, I was a teenager when Hammer was out, and people were front, like, oh, I mean, just motherfucking MC Hammer. And then you get in the car and just fucking jack. Because he's entertaining.
Our mutual friend Nick Catchdubs from Fool's Gold has this theory that everything, you know, comes in 20-year cycles.
Yes.
And we're sort of in that, like, period now where, like, I mean, obviously, like, Rick Ross had the MC Hammer song, but, like, MC Hammer, like, and that whole, like, vibe should be coming back, right?
I feel like it already came back.
Yeah?
Yeah, didn't it?
Hammer's come back a few times under a few different inclinations. Not Black, though. Like, New Kids on the Block, gratuitous Hammer.
Right.
Bite, you know what I mean? Any boy band post-96 took elements of Hammer.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's, you can't get those dance moves just from Janet and Mike. Those are some Hammer moves.
Wasn't it, like, New Edition?
New Edition?
Yeah.
New Edition was the shit, but that's not who they modeled themselves at. They didn't dance as good as New Edition. They were like, Hammer was ill with the choreographed dance. New Edition was good at choreography and just doing some slick street shit you didn't even expect. But both are equally. This is my little Hammer. It's my son, Pony.
What's happening?
Go back to your room. No one wants to see children right now.
This would have not happened if we did it at the barbershop right here.
Nah, we would have been battling junkies right now and shit. You know what I mean? You know, my barbershop's in one of those areas that's like half hipster, half the people who used to live there.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So it's like hipsters and vagrants, you know what I'm saying? That are
just like Boca Raton.
Shots out to Florida. But yeah, man, Hammer doesn't get the credit he deserves. Like, Hammer is part of the reason Atlanta is lit as fuck now.
Is that right?
Yeah, Hammer and Dion were very good friends. Dion Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
So Hammer is, you know, and if you're black with money, there's no better place in the world to party than Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Because bottles are a third of the price they are other places. Parking is still relatively cheap. And the cops don't kill you because you're driving a Bentley. You know what I mean? So Atlanta's been that. So Dion Sanders, Dominique Wilkins, and MC Hammer used to set this bitch off, like, before BMF. You know, people always say, oh, BMF turned Atlanta up.
Yeah.
They turned Atlanta up for your generation.
Right.
In my generation, we had goddamn MC Hammer, Deion Sanders, Dominique Wilkins, MC Breed, and Tupac, and Too Short running around this motherfucker doing rich nigga shit. And it was amazing as a teenager to see, like, a Ferrari, a Lamborghini, and a fucking Testarossa, a Porsche back-to-back, and then, like, all your favorite heroes. And,
yeah.
You know, and Dion even owned the club, even though he didn't drink or smoke. But shouts out to Hammer, man. Thank you for making Atlanta exciting.
Yeah, right? But,
and,
yeah,
and
we
thank you, Eric, for listening.
It was my pleasure. I'm glad that I was the one.
So after Hammer, when did you get to that as a hip-hop? If I was Joe Buttons, when you start listening to real shit?
No, you want to know what changed my life? Jay-Z changed my life. Like, Jay-Z changed my life.
First or second album?
His first album and his second album, and honestly, like, all the albums. He did the soundtrack to my life, like, and didn't it change?
So you were a drug seller?
No, but, like,
Eric just wore a fedora.
But you know what, like, the wordplay and the stories and the realness of his reality was everything to me. Yeah. I was like, it was eye-opening.
At points, Jay feels more like a Tony Robbins speech, not in a way that... It's plain, it's simple, but it's fucking eye-opening, and his testimonials are some of the best stories. Even though they're personally his stories, it makes him one of the best storytellers.
First Jay-Z song I heard was the one with Alicia Keys, and it made me move to New York City. I saw all the bright lights, Empire State of Mind.
But, and then, you know, you just, you see him with, and at the time, they really were best friends with Dame and Biggs and all them. And that meant everything, too. And then they put on State Property and...
Don't make me cry. Nah, seriously, man. That was a time.
It was an amazing time. And also, like, you know, Biggie was a big thing for us, too. Like, you know,
Biggie was a big thing. Understatement.
Yeah, it was. He was everything.
Yeah, I feel like I honestly the first Jay-Z song I really did love was the one with Foxy Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember, like, waiting for that on MTV Jams.
So I know who likes commercial radio.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I wasn't around for Reasonable Doubt. Are you kidding?
The old school brother is like, yo, I'm down with this shit off the fucking meter. You just like, I caught that shit on MTV.
Yeah. I would request it. I would call
That's
it by Dallas.
That's the Sunshine record, right?
No, I did like Sunshine, okay. The video.
I like Sunshine, too, for people who hate.
Yeah. Everybody hates
but
it.
But you're talking about the one when he and Fox were...
Yeah, the one where she talks about drive all night like a trucker. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Her sex drive all night like a trucker.
Yo, Fox, God bless her. No, this... Like, this is just... Can you just see three hip-hop fans talking? So I don't want people to think, yo, you gotta try to make a diss record on Killer Mike. Fox got away with saying a lot of shit that made no sense at times, but it sounded so good.
Yeah,
no
yeah.
Fuck. Like her numbers on yo, add a key. You remember that little spiel from whatever? That might have been on a Nas record, but I sold drugs, and I'm just like, that makes no fucking sense. Like, maybe she's using New York lingo, but I didn't give a fuck because she was dark-skinned, beautiful,
yeah.
Had great tits and a husky voice.
Yes.
Just like, yes, Fox. What she said.
Did you take sides, Foxy versus Lil' Kim?
Did I take sides? Mm-hmm. Fox, there's no side to take. Kim had Biggie writing for her.
And yeah.
Fox was the shit, but... You know, Biggie's just Biggie.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, well, you know what I'm saying? Like, going to Brooklyn. Fox had the image and she had the slickness and the voice, but the shit that Kim had was just like hardcore as an album is a classic hip hop album.
Correct.
Yep. And to me, unless you as a female rapper or any rapper surpass that one body of work, it can't. It really ain't.
Have you heard China Girl?
We
Broken Silence. I feel like I bought Broken Silence.
We grew up 30 minutes north of New York City, right?
So
just in a town called Harrison, okay. Which is just like north of like Yonkers. So like,
oh, okay,
we have the same area code as like Jadakiss and
the
all
same
them.
Same upbringing as,
that's
as
right.
Everybody. Yeah.
So you could technically say you got down to the Bronx every now and again.
Yeah. Oh no. Well, we actually did. Yeah. But like every time that Lil Kim would say like speed down the hutch 750 to Lux, we were like, the hutch.
That's us. We felt like, I can remember the first time we saw Fife and Q-Tip wearing Atlanta things. Like, I think Q-Tip or Fife was in the Georgia Tech jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And they wore, one of them wore the fucking Atlanta Braves cap.
Yeah.
It was just, that was it for me. I was like, this is my favorite fucking group. Fuck that shit. You know what I mean? It is tried for life for me. If you weren't from New York City at one point, you were just an outsider. You know, and not in the, you know, not in the most terrible of ways, but you still were an outsider. So you guys still kind of, I feel like you're, I've always wondered why you appreciated hip hop so much, because I assumed you from the city. But now I see why, though. You're close enough to see it, but far enough to appreciate it.
And also, like, the Illuminati pays us very well to all the goat sacrifices.
Well, I'm an underground rapper, but you can see they've been pretty good to me, too.
I don't know. I bought Monster. Like, you were on the whole world.
Monster, everybody's house.
No, but and you know what else? We grew up like reading the Source magazine, reading XXL magazine, reading Vibe magazine, and studying the booklets that came with like real physical CDs that we would wait and buy. Can I tell you that I waited and waited and waited? I went to Borders Books like all the time, went to Sam Goody. I wanted that Swiss Beats, that first Swiss Beats album.
The one with the painting?
The one with the painting, yeah. Yes, him, like, you know, sort of like DJing on the front. And,
yes.
I waited for that album forever.
I would wait for the Nerd album In Search Of every single week.
But we wanted those physical copies. We wanted those CDs in our books, and we wanted to, like, bump those in our cars. And and we read through those booklets to find out, like, who made what, who engineered what, who was part of the team, who was the A&R, and all this stuff. And to be around this business now and to know like the different players, whether it's an independent label like, you know, Fool's Gold, or whether it's a giant label like Atlantic, like we know all the players and appreciate their history. And that's why, like,
yeah, like we fanned out on DJ Enough the first time we met him.
Oh yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And that's probably the first time it's ever happened to DJ Enough. Like that. No. like you know, him being like, yo, like really, like, stop. Like, you guys are making me uncomfortable. And now we're friends with him. And like,
which,
you know,
is the craziest thing.
Like, everybody who was on Hot 97, like we just
we recently had Casely on the podcast.
Yeah.
And that's somebody who was like there
the drama
day one.
Yeah. The drama came.
Like, he's in the building.
Yeah.
He was one of the first people in New York to fuck with people like me, T.I., him and Bun. Scarlett. He was the first person that, you know, at a certain point, there were these imaginary regional lines in hip hop, which were good for music in terms of making regional music, but they were bad for elitism in music. And at one point, you know, when we first started going to New York, 2001, 2002, and 2003, it was kind of like the middle of crunk. They were looking at us the same way they look at kids who wear tight clothes now talking shit that ain't rap. K-Slay was one of the first people to be like, yo, you motherfucking rap. You come drop freestyle. And people like me and Tip, and he was an early supporter. And, like, he big upped our OGs like Bun, Pimp, Face, and shit. So he really taught me that there's the New York mind state of we're the shit because we're currently dropping the shit, and the New York mind state of no, we just started all this shit, but this shit went everywhere,
yeah,
and we respect it wherever it goes as long as it holds to these principles. I've always respected. I've always felt lucky to be a friend of Slay.
For sure.
Because you don't want to be on the wrong side of drama.
No.
That old man will slap the shit out of you.
Yeah. He really will.
Yeah, for real. Yeah. Like, yeah, like he's an OG, but he's still a goddamn... You still a fuck around and come out to be like 50-year-old goons waiting on you and shit. Yeah. You ain't got nothing to lose.
We have this new album that's coming out on Friday. It's called Teddy Bear Fresh, and it has everyone from Currency to Smoke DZA
to Bun to
Michael Christmas,
Tunji Ige,
right?
Yeah.
Jazz Cartier, a whole bunch of people on there. And one of the songs that we did is called Blue Cross Blue Shield. That song is all about how we vow to stay independent till we die unless the label gives us health insurance. We have had opportunities to link up with labels. What was your best label meeting story?
My best?
Yes.
Yeah.
The one where we formed our own label, has run the Jules Records and partnered with the distributor and put it out because I know at the end of the year I'm going to get a shitload of money and not have to split it with anybody but L. And that's pretty cool. But my funniest, I guess, most absurd label meeting was where Sylvia Rome came down to listen to Outkast acts to see what was going on. And of course, you know, me making a record like Monster was my attempt to do lyrically. I grew up loving East Coast music. I grew up loving all rap music, but I love East Coast music. You know, I love motherfuckers that could rap. So I tried to make a record that was representative of Southern lyricism and push it forward. You know, some people say, oh man, it's a classic. I love some people say it missed the mark. My thing is, this is my first record. I liked it a lot, but I knew I was going to get better, and I just wanted the time. Sylvia, I'll never forget. God bless her soul, her slim little soul. She heard a record by the Crowd Pleasers, who were Outkast background dancers, and they were hell of a entertainers themselves. Dance culture is big in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
The Yeek culture and that type thing. Yeah. In fact, I got a Yeek award over there. But They had a record. Oh yeah, I got a real good girl. And it was just it was a typical dope dance record, just to be honest. And I don't mean typical in a bad way, just like, you know, in Atlanta you can find 150 of those records anytime you want to. This motherfucker went crazy when she heard that record. She started leaning over the desk and just, oh, this is the future. This is what's it. And you know, the Crowd Pleasers are great guys. I love them like brothers. Still, at the time, they were 35. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like, this is my career. going down the hole as we speak, and I'm losing it to a dance record. You know what I mean? And I walked out of that meeting like, oh, well, Michael, back to selling cocaine. And I was just brutally sad. And what it caused, though, is for me to get really angry and just go on a tirade, not at them, but just at a system that valued commercial radio presence over a full body of art. I love Jay-Z for the same reason you love Jay-Z. I love Jay-Z for the album, you know, the whole. And I think that most fans that really become diehard fans of people buy into the whole thing. Like, if you're a Lil Yachty fan, you're buying into Yachty the concept. So you don't hear old people tell you what the fuck they think of a song. Shut the fuck up. You know what I'm saying? For real. You know what I mean? And so I felt like I was trying to present a piece of work to get people to just kind of, okay, this is it. Bun called me and said, you know, Mike, you're a little too advanced to be a rookie, and people are going to not like you for that. They're going to say, what gives him the right to say shit like rap is dead?
And then you said I was listening to Arrested Development.
Exactly. I've been jamming this motherfucking Arrested Development all day.
I love that show. That's what all the kids said.
But that day was a hell of a day because a guy who, at the time, me and Black on C-Bone, shouts out to him in Dope Stories. His web series is going to come out. But we were like, not enemies, but he was Big's homie and had been waiting his turn, and I just kind of came in and kind of didn't even realize my career kind of was doing the same to them, and we were like bitter rivals at the time, but that's who I rode home with.
Yeah.
Just looking fucking nuts, and he was just like, "Fat boy, don't worry, it's going to be all right." And it ended up being okay, but that's where I learned that certain record companies only want radio rights. Certain record companies are in it. And I just learned I didn't fit with that system, and that was fine. And it matured me quick enough so that when I did leave, quote-unquote, leave Aquemini, which really wasn't about leaving Big and Dre or their company. It was about leaving any association with a major label and went into making the Pledge series. Mm-hmm. It was just like, fuck it. I just do what I want, and I became a better artist because of that. But that probably was the record company story of just like it changed my life.
And you know what? That was before being independent was cool.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like
yeah.
Now,
no, because people used to shit on like people who went independent. It'd be like, oh, you can't get a major record deal.
You're poor now.
Yeah.
Yeah. That right. was it. It was right. just looked at it like, oh, you're poor.
Yeah. And obviously, sitting in your home, you know.
Yeah. You see that? Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to send any GoFundMe, we're setting up a page for Mike.
I have a typical middle class dad,
but it's
with
so
the gate.
But it's so funny. Like father, right? What was Awful Records? Like those kids, like were like some of the first to really like you know make independent.
Well, to make SoundCloud.
And L, I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
My rap
for sure. Yes, yes.
He did a hell of a job.
Yeah.
And I was a big fan of, when I say big fan of East Coast music, I don't mean I just liked everything coming out, but I was a big fan of hard shit from East Coast. I was a fan of Mobb Deep and what Loud Records was doing.
Right.
You know, I was a fan of Gangstar Foundation and what Preem and Guru's. I wanted to make, you know, music that I thought was ill, and it's just, you know, you find your place to do it.
But so why do you make the music you make now?
I mean, we make what we think is dope, and more people seem to like it. But that's the 20-year cycle thing. Like, you know, my son, who's 22, my oldest son, not the one who's still here eating off my money. he wanted AZ's Dope Do or Die album for his last birthday. That's what he got. You know what I mean? And shouts out, man, there's been so many. I missed a feature on you guys' album. I missed a feature on AZ's album. I missed a few features in the last couple of years because we've been running so
much. You've
been
a little
touring.
Busy.
Yeah. Yeah. But,
no, but listen, like, we'll push our album back if you want to send that verse in.
Listen, we're putting it out. It's not too late.
I'm finishing one for Chuck English at some point in the next few days. So if it could happen, who knows, man? Enough drugs.
Shout out to Chuck English. We saw the cool kids down at
South by Southwest.
South by.
And he just a cool motherfucker. He really is. With my barbershop, too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's
and,
what's
he,
up.
And in fact, any of you bastards that come to New York, come from New York, make sure the swag shop's one of your shops. Get a haircut, get a shave.
Yeah.
Get treated nice.
Don't get treated nice. Yeah. That's my favorite thing. Getting treated nice is my favorite thing.
Well, let me ask you, why do you guys rock so radically different haircuts?
Well, my hair doesn't grow like Eric's.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
So, like, you know, maybe if I was.
Do you
like
have
a
the
little,
same father?
We do.
Okay, that makes sense if you're talking to Black brothers. That question would make sense. You know what I mean?
I have a twin brother. Eric is a regular brother who has like a haircut that's a sort hairstyle of, that's like
oh, so there's
in between
one.
Us. Yeah.
He has a real job.
Word.
Yeah. So how about that? 10 years of dealing with like our brother's major success as like a suit. You know, working in, he worked for the Cleveland Cavaliers, worked for New York Yankees, worked for Madison Square Garden, works for the NFL.
He's
now
a real good Jewish boy. Well, you guys want to fuck around, fraternize, and rap and shit.
Yeah. 10 Thanksgivings of just like what do you do?
We were just talking to a guy on our podcast, which is, it's going to come out in a couple weeks or whatever, but he was talking about how easy it is to become a banker. And I was like, yo, shut the fuck up. Like, our mom is going to hear this and like be like furious that we took the last 10 years and did this stupid thing.
Yeah, I put up this, I found this Facebook post from 10 years ago that like announced that we were starting It's the Real, right?
Okay.
And I put that, I took a screenshot of it and I put it on Instagram and I put it on Facebook. And people find so much inspiration from the fact that we just decided to like, and this, we didn't, there was no like money in YouTube 10 years ago. There was no money like in anything that we were doing. Call ourselves hip hop sketch comedians. What is that, right? And here we are 10 years later having taken that like leap of faith and stuck to it, even though it's.
But we also came around at a time like when it was, and it's crazy to think, but like in 2007 still, it was still crazy that white kids were listening to rap.
Like, we put out, the first video we ever put out was called Deconstructing Biggie, where we took the line, "Your mag's my style, you're admiring, don't be mad, UPS is hiring," looked at it from the UPS driver's perspective, who hated it, and the DHL and the FedEx guys thought it was the greatest thing in the world. Second video was, we threw an early retirement party for Lloyd Banks, right? Lloyd Banks was, yeah, Lloyd Banks was not popping at the time, and he, you know, we threw him a retirement party in a sad conference room with sad streamers, and, like, we had a cake with his face on it, yeah. And that got put up on Not Right, and all the comments were just like,
"Who are these guys? Were they hired by the game to go at G Unit? Were they hired by Cam'ron to go at G Unit?" Like, yeah. It was like, everybody had like a conspiracy theory as to who we were, and meanwhile it's just like us two, like in our parents, you know,
because we loved it so much and knew like what was going on in the business and wanted to like put a fresh take on it. And yeah, that
people were shocked though. They were like, "Who are these white boys?"
It's just a part of our lives, and you can't explain that, by the way, to your parents. You can't be like, "Well, so Lloyd Banks, you know, isn't selling many records on his second album, but
you know." They were more of a scratch magazine crowd.
Yo, what do you miss the hip hop?
Honestly, when we got an email from Elliot Wilson in 2007 or 8, his wife was aware of us, Danielle Smith.
Yeah, shout out to her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, most definitely. She was the first
talented
person.
Talented fucking writers.
Oh, my God.
Jesus Christ. Yeah.
Yeah. She was the first person to really, really, really believe in us. And then Elliot got in touch with us.
When a black woman believes in you, you're going to be somebody.
So she was working at Vibe at the time, right? And again, we're two kids who love like everything that's going on and want to be a part of it. Want to be like on the inside and go to events and like meet our heroes and all that. And when she gave us a cosign and wanted to bring us into Vibe, we were like life is changing right now.
Come on, man.
Life didn't change then. You know, yeah, it took a while.
Because, yeah. It takes a while. Black women believed in this other Jewish guy. His name was Jesus. Yeah. It worked out. Worked out really well for him.
Well, except for the whole.
Well, yeah, he died. That was more of, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You guys' fault.
Shit happened.
But in terms of the black side,
yeah.
That nigga's golden. You know what I mean? He ain't taking no L's over here. Anything can happen. Like, goddamn, you could win from 100 years of hard work. It's like, wait. Thank you, Jesus.
What do you think about Jesus' shoe game?
Oh, it was whack. Nigga could have stepped it up and had at least some fucking big baller barons.
Yeah, yeah, get those. Whatever, get those sandals. Those, yeah, get those flip flops.
Yo, why are people so mad at fucking LeVar's dad or whoever's the dad? Is the dad LeVar or the son?
The dad is LeVar.
Why are people mad at LeVar, man? Like, think about it. We're all.
Yeah.
At,
yeah.
What the narrative in America is that black dads leave their kids.
Right.
I've been trying for years. Right? The motherfuckers upstairs now, right? But then you get a dad that's like the obnoxious white sports dads from the 80s. Remember baseball dads from the 80s when everybody thought their fucking kid was going to be fucking Maguire and shit?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Just pump him full of steroids.
Exactly. You got one of those kids. You got one. And everybody's mad about a shoe that is this ugly. And first of all, Kobe's my favorite player ever. Mm-hmm. It's as ugly as the goddamn Kobe. And the Kevin Durant. And we're mad that this guy's slinging out hustling. But yet we celebrated Patrick Ewing, who left Adidas like, fuck it, I'll start my own shoe. Dope shoe, by the way.
Shout out to 2 Chainz.
Yeah,
you know,
shout out to 2 Chainz with the Louis Vuitton fucking patch on the back. Now my wife can wear a Louis, I can wear some patch. But man, why do you think that is?
Well, I don't know if you heard, but America's racist. this is a big exclusive on our podcast. Like, it's like if Kanye wasn't as talented as Kanye is, right?
Yeah.
Like, people shit on Wale for being the same way.
Yeah.
Even though Wale, to many, or to some, maybe not as many as Kanye, is as good and as proud of himself as he is, right? Yeah. For
Wale's Nigerian, too.
Yes?
Yeah, so it's kind of like, if you're Nigerian, that's you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, Nigerian are the proudest people in the fucking world.
Well, you're talking to two Naija brothers. Yeah, so. You know, people want LeVar Bell to you know, be as good as his dad says he is, right? Yeah.
Lonzo Bell.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't follow basketball like I should, so yeah.
You just follow shoes like you should, right?
I follow like Twitter as I should.
Hey, man, I'm just saying, I fuck with your dad. I hope your son does what the fuck he's supposed to do. Mm-hmm. If not, they're going to laugh at you, my nigga. God damn, those shoes are ugly.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about y'all's parents.
Yeah.
What do they do? Who are they?
So our dad passed away a few years ago.
God bless the dead.
Yeah. He He was a company man. He worked for IBM and Citibank, and he was a guy who his parents sort of like forced him into that lane of like physics, and you know, going to Case Western Reserve in Cleveland, Ohio, right?
Which he never visited, and then soon hated.
Yeah,
as soon as he got there,
his parents forced him into education.
Well, that specific part of education, honestly, physics. Like yeah, physics and math and all that.
Make money.
I think they probably thought that, yeah, you know, yeah. And our dad...
Because our grandfather had worked for NASA.
Yeah.
And okay. So, like, you know, it was basically like, I want you to do something that's as good as me, basically.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And he loved the arts. He just, you know, he loved going to museums. He loved listening to music. He just, he didn't want that, like, physics life, right?
Gotcha.
But he knew that that was a job. And then yeah. when he started raising us and our brother Dan... It was a 9-to-5 behind a computer screen, like, you know, for his whole life. And there was a point when he did try to start his own company,
yeah.
right? And it didn't really work out. And he went back to IBM or Citibank, one of the two. And then our mom was a magazine editor. Yeah, she worked for Ladies
all the women's
Home Journal.
Magazines in like the 70s.
So yeah,
she
Family
was
Circle.
For, yeah, those. And then she became like an editor, which was a big deal because they didn't make lady editors in the
70s. Yeah, yeah.
And so then she had Eric.
And I cost her career. Yeah. yeah.
but no, like, but, like literally, like she left on maternity leave and then came back, and there was a woman sitting at her desk.
Yeah. Yeah, and her father was a lawyer and was like, we might want to, like, you know, take this to court and everything. But it ended up where, you know, she devoted her time to us and raising us, which is the best job.
Yeah.
And then she did some nursery school teaching, but always, they were both very supportive of us, however, whatever career we were going to take, right?
Gotcha.
There were a lot of screaming matches after college, you know, and when
For
I
you.
Came home, yeah. Where it was like, oh, like, just get a temp job, get this job, go to grad school, do something.
But you were also, like, acting crazy. Like, you wanted to be a feature film writer and director.
I did.
And so what would you do to make that happen?
I graduated college.
What school?
I went to Syracuse University.
Okay.
Had a degree in filmmaking and a minor in drama.
You
right?
did it like a black kid.
I came home and I was like, I'm going to write a script right now, right? For the whole summer following college, I would run to Rye Playland, which is like the big amusement park right on the beach, like by where we lived.
Probably like, you know, 2 or 3 miles away.
Right. I would run. Like, I never ran in my life. I ran. I stuffed like paper in my running shorts and a pen, ran down there, wrote, and then when I got hungry
then
I would
come
run
back.
You know, 2.5 miles back home. Did that for a whole summer. And by the way, you're a father. What would you do if your kids did that?
I would probably yeah nail the shit out of them with a chest punch. And at some point we definitely would be having an intervention at the table with the counselor, like, oh, this motherfucker's on drugs.
There were so many screaming matches, and I did take temp jobs. I worked some shitty temp jobs until, you know, by the time Jeff graduated college, you know, we linked up and
so,
decided
but,
to work together.
So Jeff, you got Jeff and the twin.
Yeah, Dan.
So you got Jeff and Dan.
Yeah.
All right. So Jeff and Dan.
Yeah. And Dan is in the Midwest at this time.
So Dan's in the Midwest. So yeah. And are you showing signs of fucking insanity like your brother yet?
No.
Are you playing this shit like your parents are already fucked up on that nigga? I'ma just play this shit like I'm cool with the academics and shit. Were you playing that role?
I would say I went to Boston University.
Gotcha.
But I didn't really go to class.
You got high.
No, that would probably be more interesting. I just ate lunch like 3 times a day with like friends. I would just like keep running into people I knew, and I would just like hang out in the student union.
So you probably could have sold his script.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all that happens
you
in
know,
LA.
I'm like an agent talk, you know? But so I had no idea what I really wanted to do out of college. Eric had
What were you majoring?
American Studies.
Oh, so at least you could have been a teacher.
I don't know what you would do with that.
Yeah, American Studies, you go teach fucking high school. You're the one cool Jewish fucking high school.
Right,
guy.
I'm like the one that goes.
Yeah,
to like
all the black kids assume you white.
Tree.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Jeff rolls up wearing his like Lonzo Ball shoes and
some shit.
Yeah.
Exactly. The black kids are like, no, he ain't really white. He Jewish. He cool. I'm telling you, he ain't like them other folk, man. I'm telling you, he ain't no racist.
So I would write all my papers on hip hop, and I was just like, I guess I want to write for Rolling Stone and or XXL or whatever.
So where's Dan?
now.
Dan was working for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Being responsible.
Yeah,
being
responsible. Yeah, working girlfriend. His way up in sales. He had one.
Yeah.
He had one. He was responsible with that, too.
Yeah, I figured.
And then Dan came back to New York, worked for the Yankees, Madison Square Garden, and now works for the NFL. Now, by the way, so we grew up loving hip-hop, right?
Okay.
We took car trips with our parents to go see our grandparents and all that. We're in the back with our Walkman on, listening to, like, rap on, like, crazy, like, you know, volume levels.
Gotcha.
Our parents never got that aspect of it. We would try to play them Beanie Siegel records, and they were just like, come on. Like, what? What do you, what? We don't understand.
They like the Beanie Siegel and Eve joint.
Yeah.
They did.
And so we, only when I graduated college, and I was like, you know what? Scripts, you know, I tried to sell the scripts. They didn't sell, right? I had meetings with, like, Barry Diller. I had meetings with, like, United Artists, Fox Animation. I would pitch these places because we're stubborn people, we're focused people, absolutely. and we're just going to, like, knock down the doors. And we're going to get into the highest levels because we're going to skip the gatekeepers.
Yeah.
But the scripts were not selling. And there's probably a good reason why they weren't selling. They weren't good scripts, right?
Gotcha.
I just didn't live any life at that point, honestly. Like, I was
about to say, to be writing full feature so young.
Like, no, what did I know? I was writing about high school stuff. Like, gotcha. The stuff, if I read it
Eric
now,
had the vision.
No. But mom and dad's opinion on rap changed when... I was like, you know what? I'd rather be like a big fish in a small pond and work for someone who has a small film company. And in reading all those rap magazines, I knew that Kanye West, this up-and-coming producer, had a film company out of Chicago called Hustle Film with John Monopoly and Don C. And I was like, I want to work for those guys.
And this is 2003?
Yeah. So our brother Dan comes home from college on spring break or something.
His first
like
spring break.
And Dan, his friend from college, and I went down to
Asbury Park,
New Jersey, where Bruce Springsteen's from, right?
Gotcha.
And Kanye was performing there with John Stevens. You know,
John Legend.
On keys.
Yeah.
He was John Stevens. Don C was
DJ Offbeat,
right? The push button DJ.
Wow.
Lil Brother was opening up for them. Quali was there, and Consequence and GLC.
Shout out to Cons.
Yeah. We saw Consequence the other day at SOBs.
And GL, yeah.
Yeah. So we waited outside. I mean, we saw the concert. We're just like, this guy's everything. Like, and by the way, he changed my life. He changed my life in a whole bunch of different ways. Yeah. But his music changed my life. And then we waited outside to meet them afterwards at their tour bus. And I, you know, talked to everyone and connected with Don C. And Don C was like, let's stay in touch. You got to talk to John Monopoly and let's all, you know, do something together. So over the next year, we would meet up in different cities and talk about different projects. And eventually, Don C hit me up right before Kanye's first Grammys and asked me to come document them 24/7. So I went to L.A., and was with the biggest artist during his biggest week, right? Yeah. 24/7 with all of them who treated me like family, like Happy and all the real like street Chicago guys who were rolling with him back then brought me in close and treated me like family, like a kid from 30 minutes north of New York City who with a camera who they didn't, you know, need to protect or do anything for. I was with them and part of their crew, and everyone there looked out for me. 88 Keys, John Monopoly, Don C, A-Track, all those guys from back then. After going to every party, going to every function, going to every speech and dressing and you know, Grammy after party, and seeing what like life was like on that level, I went to, you know, Clive Davis's party. I was just like, what am I doing? Like, Common and I got stuck outside there. Like, the last night, I rode up an elevator that looked outside. It was one of those glass elevators up my hotel that was on... I think it was on Hollywood Boulevard or on Sunset or something. I looked over the city and I was like, it was like 4 a.m. I was by myself in my suit with my camera bag. And I just had the greatest week ever. And I threw up the rock
to nobody, but to the entire city.
To the entire city.
Yeah.
It was just me. And that it was the saddest thing, but the greatest thing. Came back from that. And my parents were like, we see what it is. We understand Kanye, especially when he did Hey Mama.
Yeah, mom loved that.
Like, oh, well, this is the greatest person on the face of the earth. I'm with it. And they saw the vision. And then they gave us some leeway with our creative sort of endeavors.
Does leeway include free money or rent? Or?
No. Well, no. I guess rent technically, because we lived with them for probably like, what,
a year or so, and then we moved to New York City on our own to make it. But yeah, like it was less yelling. It was less like it was more. They knew that we had some sort of vision and that we could make something happen.
That's dope. It, you know, what's really dope is.
Wait, did you hear the part where Eric threw up the rock? That's not dope. Well,
you know, that is kind of dope, especially since he's a Jay-Z fan.
Yeah.
Oh, yo, I was at a party with him and Ludacris and Kanye and Magic John. I mean, it just the list went on and on.
Prince,
and
Larry King.
I was just like, this is insane. Like, this is a weird dream I'm having, you know?
You guys know Emmanuel from Rockefeller?
We sure do.
Manny.
Manny introduced me to Kanye. She had him come down and bring beats. And he and I had an impromptu rap battle for like 20 minutes. And at the end of the rap battle, you know, we just going bar for bars. You're not really battling, just letting motherfucker know I can rap.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, he's trying to show the world he can rap too. And at the end of the rap battle, he called his cousin to bring better beats because the first shitty bar was bullshit.
Wow.
not like in a bullshit, but this guy like, nigga, you Kanye West. Like, he didn't realize I really was a nerd ass. You know, I'm a booklet reader. I'm a fucking hip hop listener. Like, yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, at that point, I'm such a big No ID fucking fan. The fact he even knew No ID.
Oh my God.
You know what I mean? I was really trying to meet him to meet No ID. You know what I'm saying? And he ended up bringing a record that was dope. It was a sample, You Can't Stop Me in the World, Can't Stop Me. So shouts out to Yeezy.
Oh my God.
But I say all that just to say for kids who are listening, you know, the ultimate thing is fucking persistence is what I'm hearing. You know what I mean? Because the reason I asked about it, your parents still supporting you, is a lot of people, they use as the excuse, oh, my, I can't do it. Their parents had their back, or somebody underwrote that. But you guys just sound like you were willing to suffer.
Oh, yeah.
Like, fuck it. I'll be the guy that sleeps in the fucking van if I have to. But I know that this weekend too is important. And I think a lot of times we don't. Like, I got a record deal because I was willing to fucking not leave the studio. Like, Big Boy and Dre and the Dungeon Family. Again, I use BMF as a marker because culturally that's our marker because everyone can see it.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to BMF, you know what I mean? Prior to that launch of 40, 50 guys all spending $1,000 in the club together, what you had was rap crews doing that shit. But in Atlanta, there was a special mix of here. Strip clubs aren't these just pleasures of perversion. You throw money because you don't want other men to look at you and think you're the man. They were like, you went to school with the dancers. You fucking knew them. It's your homegirl. You're going to dance for them, but you know her real name, Tiffany. Dungeon Family would march 20, 30 guys into the gentleman's club, and you just have a ball. Athletes would be upstairs, rappers would be downstairs. They get to mix and mingle at the very bottom. All the girls knew each other. What's up? Sugar, honey, white chocolate, all. And man, they were going, and I wanted to go so fucking bad this night. And this night, they had a record in called The Whole World. And I was just like, fuck, I want to. And I think me and Slim and a couple of more guys in the studio, and Slim was already more popping. I think his record is out. He's doing actually shows and bigs. Looked at me and said, hey, man, you might want to stay, put a verse on that. I was like, fuck! I stayed and put a verse on that. I literally slept in the studio, and they came back from the studio a few hours later, heard that verse in Big and said it's on it. And
whatever happened to that record?
Yeah, never heard it again.
I just say that to tell people, man, just be like you were saying, persistent. Like, well,
even like talk about the W Hotel.
There was one time in that year where I was staying in touch with John Monopoly. He was working for Violator. He was working for Epic. Remember, he signed a kid named Dirtbag over at
Dirtbag.
Epic. Yeah. There was a whole like time there where
Dirtbag was a chubby black kid from Florida.
Right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
He had like a Timbaland single that was on like the XXX soundtrack.
The song is great.
John Monopoly would go from job to job to job and like give no notice. Certainly not to me, who he knew like, you know,
tangentially. Sort of, yeah.
And so one time he was in New York and I was like, yo, I know you're here. Like, let's link up. I want to, you know, talk about this project he was trying to have me. I'm good. Thank you.
I'm offering him weed.
He wanted to, John Monopoly wanted to do a documentary on his family. They were the Johnson family from Chicago. And so.
Oh, the Johnsons are from the hair care.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
That is a big fucking deal.
Yeah.
So I am also involved in hair care, so that really interested me.
You're also a black man.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I was going to link up with him and talk about that. And he was like, all right, meet me at the W Hotel. And that was it. There's a million W Hotels in New York. And so I just guessed which one it was and ended up at the right one because I saw Consequence in the lobby. And I'm like, yo, I was like, it's me. Like, do you remember me from waiting outside of the bus down at Asbury Park or whatever? I bought two of your mixtapes off of you because you said then I can meet Don C, right? He's persistent, too.
Yeah.
So I went up. He was like, oh, yeah, come see John upstairs. Went upstairs, and in there were GLC and A-Track and Happy and a whole bunch of guys. So I was like, oh, what's up? And finally, like, tracked down John Monopoly. But, yeah, we're the kings of persistence.
Yeah, and of emailing people. And
when we those Danielle Smith years at Vibe, we would find ways to sneak into the building when they wouldn't see us.
Well, like, you guys are white.
Well,
no, I'm just, come on now. Hell, if I try to sneak in the building, they're going to think I'm security or call security for me.
But we just kept at it. And you know who, and you mentioned before, the biggest cosign, the thing that meant most to us, was when Bun B called us on the phone.
Come on, man.
And when Bun B, you hear his voice.
It was like a random Wednesday morning at 8 o'clock, and we were like, hello? And he said, first time, long time, and he told us how he, like, was really fucking with our videos and how he wanted to do something with us. And we were just like, how'd you get our number? Like,
again, Bun B.
Yeah. Oh my. And it was through Theta, I think.
And we're not making any money at the time. Like, we're just two guys, and we did two things right back then. Consistency and quality. Our videos were going to be up there every Monday regardless.
Yeah.
And they were really produced well.
Thank you. That was the other thing. And because we wanted to set ourselves apart from everyone else on YouTube. Because
at that point... Yeah. I mean, like, it's very easy to sit at a table and go to the camera and just be like, subscribe below, like that sort of thing. Like, we were always like, we want a different look every single week. We want to, you know, either we're running around and we're getting a bunch of guests or we're just doing something that makes it... better than last
week. It needs to be better. It needs to be smarter. It needs to stand out, because if you're on your RSS feed and you see the same old shit, and this is what we did our whole career. If you're doing the same old shit, people are just going to pass that by.
Yeah.
We had no problem being different, no problem putting ourselves out there, and we did it. So Bun calls us, and then, you know, Joey IE's like, you want to get Cam on the podcast or on the show, and we get you know, Cam's our hero, right?
Yeah, Cam's everyone's hero.
Yeah.
First of all, let me announce that.
Yeah.
fucking Cam Ryan.
And then you know, person after person, the clips, like, you know, get it, Slaughterhouse, like all these.
That was the thing that attracted me to you guys. It was absurd sketch comedy, but it was done with people that I really liked and respected from a real way.
Right.
So it was not like, oh, it's some real shit, as much as, man, it's totally hilarious because the people are authentic. You know, if you knew a publicist didn't just hook this up because it was a good look for the artist at the time, like, you motherfuckers got real rappers. And just let me announce, Bun B is like the Morgan Freeman of rap, not in terms of age, but voice.
Yeah.
Like, when that motherfucker's voice comes on,
it really,
like,
is like God.
It's like God. It's like, hello. He got me. Bun B got me to stop sipping lean.
Is that right?
Yeah, like straight the fuck up. We were down in Texas. That's how I learned the independent hustle. I've just learning from, like, Flip and Hump were the first guys to kind of run Grind Time around there. And then we met Cam and Chameleon there. They took us to the north. And, you know, the South Side guys were just fucking phenomenal, man. And I just started having too much fun getting fucked up every day. Right? And Bun called me, man, say, hey, Killer. And I'm like, yo, what's up, Bun? At this point, he's like a big brother.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you know, I just want to talk to you about. And, man, after that, like, that's 8-10 minute conversation about what this shit really does to you, man, I just felt, first of all, like an addict. I just felt like, damn, I'm awful. And since then, I'm cool. You know, I've done it a couple times after that, but it's just not a thing that I do.
Yeah.
Because culturally, it'll suck you in. You know, you sip, you hang out, you rap your ass off for hours and hours, and then you sip some more. And Bun was the person that called me on some homie shit, like, nah.
Is this after Pimp?
No.
Wow.
No. This is before. This is early. Whenever the first Grind Time came out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was like I was going in. Because I was depressed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I said, fuck major labels, lost my friends, you know what I mean?
And
then it just was like, man, fuck it. Me and my homies going to rap, do dope, and just go. And I was functioning. I was right, but I wasn't right. Mm-hmm. So Bun, like, the voice of God called me. That's when I realized, I hung up like, man, this nigga must be God.
There's no one like him, and
one of the most pure and sincere human beings. His wife and my wife are friends.
He's a real, real life friend.
Absolutely. Shouts out to Queenie too.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, for real. Yeah. Queenie don't fuck with nobody.
No.
And, real black woman.
And Bun has been there every step of our career to co-sign stuff that we're doing.
Yeah, but also to be like, because we always involve him in everything we do, but he'll, every single time we ask him to do anything, he's like, is this going to kill my career? Like, is this, like, having him, we did a song with him called Girls of the Dirty South. It's about women who keep it au naturel, pubic options. Yeah. And so, and the video.
70s Playboy.
Yeah, no, really, like, just really out here. And like humidity waves, and so we went down to Houston to shoot the video, which was going to be all of us as the world's worst landscapers, who, because we salute those women who let their bush grow, and we to have him on there and to have him, like, you know, go along with the funny, because nobody allows Bun to be funny that way. Like,
and he's one of the funniest.
Yeah,
and that's something that was real important to us. We're like, you. Remember when Kanye and 50 went against each other? Their albums came out on September 11, 2007, right? And I think Kanye and 50 was like, I'm going to retire if Kanye beats me in sales, whatever. Kanye won for a few reasons, but I think one of which was he was so transparent with his fans. Like, he was just like, this is me. And we took something from that. We're like, people should just show all sides to them, all their colors, right?
But this is also at a time when we were first coming out, that a lot of opportunities weren't being extended to rappers to show more sides of their personality. Like, obviously that's changed now with, like, you know, Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat. Like, everybody can see that it's a rapper is a human as opposed to, you know, a gangster, you know?
Right.
So we wanted to be, when we first started out, we wanted to be either a place where people could show more sides to their personality, or at least be the SNL for rap.
That's because, like, what I first saw you at.
Because, like, you know, rappers weren't on SNL.
Yeah.
Like now, you know, you see Migos on Last Night. You see fucking, like, you know, Chance the Rapper, whoever else.
If they're going to have Jay-Z in a sketch, it's going to be, like, you know, sort of just sitting in the car.
Right. He didn't have any.
While Will Ferrell does something, you know? So it wasn't, like, an active part of this thing. And we were just like, We speak the language. We know the culture. We wanted to properly represent four people in a different way. You know,
you guys have done a fine job.
Thank you.
Because when I first saw, I say, wow, it's like SNL with rappers. But knowing some of the guys you've had, I was like, whoa, that's really him. And that's really what's most genius. Like, it's very hard in this country, and that's not to go too serious, to help this country understand that black men in particular are whole human beings.
Yeah.
That love, that care, that concerns, that are funny, that are ridiculous, that are audacious, you know what I'm saying? Or that can be assholes. And you guys have been one of the best factors in terms of helping to just show rappers to their audience that it's not just what you hear for those 45 minutes you're listening to.
Well, thank you. Right. And you know what's really important about this podcast, I think, and we've done it for 120 episodes at this point, right? So for 2 years or
something. Yes, 2 years. 2 years or two.
We really want to have someone like Wale on, because you watch Everyday Struggle, and I get the point of one of those shows. Like, it's like First Take, where it's like, you're just going to argue. That's all it is. You're watching two different, you know.
Yeah, two sides come together.
And you're going to argue about something.
Yeah.
When Wale's album sold, you know, 22,000 records its first week, it was like, well, it's either Atlantic Records' fault or it's Wale's fault. And that was, like, their argument. And I thought, I watched that, and with all due respect to everyone on that show or behind that show, I was like, Wale's more than just 22,000 records. Wale's more than just this argument. Like, Wale is a full person, and whatever people want to make of him, like, let's give him the chance to have him on here and tell his whole story. Yeah. Like, why not?
Right.
Yeah. So
soup to nuts to table.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
is he going to do y'all show?
Oh, we don't know. Yeah.
We're going to try.
No.
We're trying.
The first time we met Wale was like 2008 or something outside
of
SOBs.
Does he like you guys, or he don't fuck with y'all?
No, he likes us.
He does like
but
us,
but he keeps us at arm's length. Because
Wale, you called me one time to wake Dre up at fucking 2 in the morning, so of all the times I could call that favor in, I don't see myself really doing a girl song in the future or... You know, I don't think my kids' college classes, I don't think I'm their vain necessarily. So, since I won't call you for that, man, do their show. I'd love to hear you. Just because I like you. I like Wale.
Totally. But so the first time we met him, he said, please don't make fun of me until I get big. And I was like, that's very, like, you know, indicative.
And
of,
another thing, too, I just like to stay for
the
record.
I would say, fuck with me from the start.
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, our comedy comes from, like, the roasting tradition. Like,
yeah.
We poke because we know, and we love, you know? Yeah. So it's not like...
I just think as men, shit is better than.
Yeah.
Like, I tell people all the time, they'll be like, oh, man, you're fucking with me talking shit. Well, you know, I grew up a fucking chubby kid, so you'll take it. You'll be all the fucking right. But if I don't like you, I don't talk to you. Like, if I didn't like you guys, this conversation would have been a whole nother way. I'd ask Coach to shut the fuck up. Ask Coach shut the fuck up. But
also, you probably wouldn't have us over at your house.
Maybe. I just would have had, like, 20 black guys with guns walking around and shit, like a vice.
That'd be like when we shot our video with Max B.
Shouts out to Max. But just to say, you know, that more young artists should not, especially artists that are from the street, don't be afraid to smile. Because most of you got good teeth for a minute. And don't be afraid to show your whole humanity. This shit ain't just pain. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We get absorbed in that shit sometimes. It's coming up. As young men, period. As young, whether you want to be a rapper or a fucking lacrosse player or shit, you really get, you know, driven into this place where you don't show. Like my daughter's mom's, Mikey's mom, Muff, will always say to me, well, did you cry? You know, when something good happens. Because she knows I'm going to cry. Yeah, I'll fucking cry. You know what I'm saying? I'll fight, but I'll fucking cry too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think that you guys, again, doubling back around, it brought a humanity to rappers that I like. Cam is funny as fuck.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Like, to see, like, he's funny on tape, but you'll be horrified at the shit you hear if you're your mom. You know what I mean?
Right.
But when you see Cam'ron and see the audaciousness of it, it's like watching Ric Flair.
Yeah.
By the way, so our mom is like, come, like, you know, in 10 years, she's come to totally appreciate. So she's thrilled and she says hi, by the way.
Hey, mom, what's her name?
Her name is Marjorie.
Hey, Miss Marjorie, how you doing? I'm Michael, DC son. Good to meet you.
She loves you. Whenever she sees you on like
Colbert,
she's just like, and she'll write us emails, and she loves Killer Mike. She called to wish us well before we flew down here. She was like, please say hi to Killer Mike.
Thanks, Miss Marjorie.
Hope you have a great conversation.
You got good boys. They refuse drugs, and I haven't offered them alcohol yet.
So we did go to SOB's the other day where we saw Consequence, and it was Sci-Hi, The Prince.
He's dope.
Yeah.
He's from Decatur.
Yeah. And there were a few others who were signed to the same label that he signed to with Shadow over there at Sony Red. And this one dude whose name is Special from Brooklyn brought, what do you think, 30?
Yeah, 40 30. And it's a small stage.
On stage. Old school style.
Yeah.
You know, I played SOB's.
And, oh, yeah, no, of course. So he's up there. And he goes, any of these dudes would shoot for me. Fine, okay, fine. And he's like, anybody
if
up here.
If I had a flat tire, they would come running.
He go,
and I was like, my friends suck.
He's like, street shit. And I was like, actually, technically, that is street shit. Like, you had a flat tire, that is street shit. And then DJ Enough was up there, and he was like bouncing up and down with them like when they were like mobbing on stage. And I was like, I wonder if Enough would actually change his tire for him, you know?
Yeah.
But do you have any Entourage stories? Because we have another song on our album featuring Bun B.
About, it's called V-neck, and it's because our crew is so deep.
So deep.
Yeah, looking like a V-neck. It's all about like how our entourage is just like humongous. Did you ever like roll with like MC Hammer numbers?
I didn't. Couldn't afford to.
Oh.
But definitely roll with, you know, 8 to 10 homies. You know what I mean? And
did you have any problems in any doors?
Yeah, we had a Hypnotic sponsorship.
Congratulations.
Thank you, and it's back. And I see they use Cam as an ambassador.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
I wouldn't have made a good ambassador because for some reason we got the idea to mix Hypnotic, which was like 7 different cognacs or some shit, like that was Radiator Blue, with vodka. Mm-hmm. So we were like, hey, let's take this whole bottle of Grey Goose. Let's take this whole bottle of Hypnotic and let's pour it together over ice.
What'd you call it?
We call that shit. I forgot. I don't even know what we call it. I guess it worked. I fought every time I drank that shit. Every time, and I don't mean fault, I mean fault with security. Like, man, move. Fuck you, nigga. You know what I mean? It's like the guy paid that night to watch my life and make sure I made it out of this club and fucking kill a nigga Georgia. I made, like, he at some point be like, yo, man, you need to fuck you. You know what I mean? Man, who you talking? You, nigga.
This stuff was consistent.
You know, man, it just went bad.
Is this Killer Mike or is this Mike Bigga?
This is Killer Mike. Yeah. Mike Bigga's a much nicer guy. He understood it. Like, he understood that I have a purpose. Killer Mike was like, nigga, I was in the whole world video, nigga. You must ain't got cable, nigga. Like,
He's in Wallahoosie, Georgia. Man.
Oh, like, my God.
He just came from a junior college in Iowa playing tight end, wondering why he's not going in. He doesn't fucking know you, Killer Mike. You know, all the people around him who get to watch MTV and BET do it, just lead a guy alone. So we decided to stop accepting that sponsorship, you know what I mean? Because
only bad things.
Yeah, that shit would turn me into the fucking Hulk. That and
did you ever do Incredible Hulks?
No, I drink is just not my thing. Yeah. Now it just tasted a little too good, and it was the thot drink of the era.
But
the illest story ever. And Cuz Lightyear, who's a burgeoning rapper now, growing up, some dope records. We call him fresh out of high school. Like, he's a kid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, 10 years ago, he's literally a kid.
Right.
And we're in Macon, Georgia, and our nigga snatch my chain, kill him like Gucci Mane, is in a rhyme, Now, I've had a good relationship with Macon, made a lot of money down the Chilton Circuit. I've done, you know, you're never scared to react. You just, you get towns that love you. You kind of march back around, and we had absolutely one thing we couldn't do that night. Just say that line. Damn, nigga, my chain, kill him like Gucci. Because the young man, unfortunately, who was killed in that whole tobacco was making, and God bless him, that part is not funny. But to be on stage, and I don't know if it was Gigi or Cuz. I don't think it was Cuz, although it might have been Cuz. And if it wasn't, fuck it. They got your name said two more times. People go Google you and hear some dope music because you're an adult now. You're about to pop. But somebody threw something, and it went to, nigga, if you throw, and that shit went to, wow, bottles and fighting, and we just got out of there like rats escaping a room full of cats trying to kill them. We snatched the money out of the promoter's hand on the way out, jumped in the van, ducked to avoid bullets, and got our ass back up to Georgia like that. Shouts out the money, wow, man. So that's one of those classic Southern stories. Like, we did shit like that. Man, you'd be in a place like the Rolls in Alabama. Half the club would be Crips. Half the club would be Bloods. There would be this imaginary line where the whole left side of the stage would be blue, the whole right side would be red. And it was like those kind of – that Chitlin Circuit experience is a hell of an experience on the come up. That's why I don't shit on young rappers, especially ones – that come up on the street shit out of the South, because they had to earn it.
Yeah.
You know, in a different way than other entertainers.
What was your experience at SOBs?
At SOBs?
First time.
First time was dope. It was us opening for Dead Prez. It was Dead Prez headliner, Killer Mike in the middle, and Youngbloods.
Wow.
Youngbloods.
That's dope. So this is like 2003-ish?
Yeah, 3-ish, 4-ish.
Yeah.
Yep. And Dead Prez was the most. I mean, man, they were beating the block up. You know what I'm saying? So my whole shit was, okay, they got the Youngbloods, who got a dope-ass record, but I know some of the audiences ain't going to, you know until they get into the records. You got Dead Prez to this extreme when we come through the South, you got an audience that's kind of coming from Youngbloods. They're going to stick around for me because I got couple big records on Chitlin Circuit. That's when I first understood that I was a connector between two worlds.
Yeah.
Because I was a Southern dude. I loved and made those kind of records. And I also grew up loving East Coast records. And I made and was comfortable over those type of beats and records and messaging. That's when I first realized it was space for me in music in a different way than what even Outkast thought I should be doing, the record company thought I should be doing, even what I had thought I'd be doing.
Yeah.
So the first time I did SOBs, I was nervous as fuck because I thought it was just going to be some RBG shit. And it was that too, but my music connected with them in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And the Youngblood stuff and the stuff that we had similar connected, but I realized the power of a mean-ass record with, like, Never Scared.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Just like, oh, you can do records that nobody give a fuck about. They just jamming, and that's what I think. By the time I got to Run the Jewels, I understood it. Like, make the music jamming. Like, fuck what people need is their particular message for that particular thing. Make the dope records, and people are gonna fuck with it. You know?
Did Bone Crusher ever cook for you?
Yes, that motherfucker had a hell of a macaroni and cheese. Probably the reason I don't call him as often now because my trainer would fucking kill me.
We headline SOBs, right?
Yeah.
Back in February. And
people got to understand about this club. It's a weird club in that the stage is here, but to get to the stage, you walk from below ground.
Yeah.
Through the crowd. Yeah. On the stage. So it's kind of like Elvis at a Hawaii concert.
Yeah.
If motherfuckers like you, it feels like shit. And if they don't know you, it's the scariest walk of your fucking life.
Like, it's just like, excuse me.
Exactly.
Sorry, excuse me.
Like, who the fuck? And you're like,
I have to go on stage. Yeah,
yeah. we had Just Blaze DJ for us. And we brought out Freeway, which was, so talk about like guys who grew up on Rockefeller, like this was, oh, to be on the same stage as those guys was like,
we should have thrown out the rock more.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. But a couple things funny happened that night. One of which was, you know, that tiny dressing room downstairs.
I do.
They have a door there and they usually have security working there. And I think because we're just, I don't know.
Yeah,
friendly regular, people, yeah. Who know this whole audience.
Like you know. we had a list. You know, we were like, oh, you know, because like you know, because we were like,
we're trying to take this like as professionally as like we can, right?
But we were also like, you know, these are all of our friends, but we don't want to see all of our friends down in our dressing room.
Yeah, yeah.
And so Eric had to run around because Freeway was having trouble getting up to New York. And I was down there by myself freaking out, but, you know, silently. Just walking around the dressing room by myself, like literally in circles because I was so nervous about this whole thing coming together. And suddenly all these people start coming down and they're just like, hey, like, how do you feel about the show? And I'm just like, I want to die. But like, I don't want to tell them that.
Because they didn't staff any like security there. Like, you know, the tight end from like Iowa who just moved there, like was not there. Yeah. It's like people drop their coats off at Coat Check downstairs and then come in their way
down
to hang out. And we're just like, they're drinking, they're doing whatever. And we're just like, we just want to focus and remember our lyrics and all that. Like, so we don't want to.
I'm the same way before. We are the same way. Like, we're just an hour before the show, just leave us the fuck alone.
Yeah.
Like, we love you and shit, but just stop.
Yeah. Like, you sort of have to get into like a mindset.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you're nervous. Like, people ask, how you feel? I was like, I'm nervous. Like, you've done 100 shows, and I'm fucking nervous. Yeah. Stop talking.
Like, I'm just happy I don't throw up. Like, yeah. it was bad. But we got through
it. You look like nothing rattles you.
I do?
Yeah, I mean, you got, like, the Ben Affleck in the accountant look, haircut and glasses. Like, you like you could kill a motherfucker and eat a pancake.
I mean, I
while his body's still on the table, just like, yep, you talk to Dan? All right, talk to bro.
Yo, I'm really good at a shotgun. I've gone skeet shooting. And,
really?
Yeah.
We could go around the corner. We can't go today. Yes, a little too, might be a little too wet.
Oh, I was going to be like, your neighbors shotguns. Have problems with shotguns being shot off right next to them?
Yeah. I mean, you're on 3 acres.
Oh, nobody's true.
Gonna, yeah, nobody, yeah. I mean, I got one neighbor.
Who?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, there's a shotgun next street over. There's a skeet. The Olympic skeet shooting range is over there from back in 96.
Whoa.
And my wife, I think she got her shotgun. We got a couple shotguns in the house.
Man. Yeah. I mean, with the skeet shooting.
A lot of guns in the house, actually.
We have a song on the album called Sure Did, which is about like talking to like just people who might not believe in us, like the haters out there.
Oh,
like,
yeah, yeah.
And this is
the proverbial haters.
That's right.
Yeah. The people you make up in your mind even if they aren't there.
That's right. But we live in an age now where like you're so accessible via Twitter and Instagram and everything that and people just think that they can say whatever they want recklessly. And they don't care if you see it, and if you do acknowledge them, they get some sort of thrill out of that.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that? Because like we're of a certain level, and we get like you know a lot of people love us, some people don't.
Yeah.
And they make that known.
You're
you
culture
are
appropriators.
You are.
we the culture vultures prefer that nomenclature.
And really, you're just two fucking kids who love rap.
That's
like
it. That's it. But you're times a million, right? Like you're out there on national TV. You're out there touring the country. What do people say to you, and how do you take it on social media?
Do they ever call you a Democrat? Do they ever call you a socialist?
Yeah. Also, I mean, you also like you know come back to your house and can probably like shut it out and not care. Yeah, yeah. How do you handle it?
I like to fight, so I do. I care.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't care about everything you say, but like first of all, like if you insult me, calling me fat, it's like that doesn't really bother me
right.
much, just because you know, I mean, my wife makes me work out and eat better, but I've been fat most of my life. It's kind of how I learned how to talk shit. So that's cool. Like, you're fat. Man, your mom sucked my uncle's dick. It's like, nah, in real life, your mom smokes bass. My uncle gets his fucking head from you. I'll bring you a picture. You want me to, you know what I'm saying? Because he knows his mom really sucks dick. That made him angry. Yeah. Like, these are the kind of, so I never gave a fuck about that shit as much as, you know, you learn to talk shit or you fold up like a sucker. So for you guys that just say, yo, you fat at, all right. You know what I mean? Cool, my nigga. You know what I mean? I'll think about that on the treadmill tomorrow as you're going to work. But the ones that are really, that are really, you know, that I wouldn't say get to me is the ones that assume because I liked a particular policy or a person or something that I'm this side. You know what I'm saying? Like, God bless, man, white conservative men. They don't really research before they insult.
What?
You know what I mean? They just insult. You know, they just like, they saw an episode of Power and all of a sudden, fucking, they know what you are. And it's just like, you know, so my friend Colin Knorr, he's an NRA guy. He's a black guy. And like, he'll post up something about me. Guys, like, yeah, fuck, I don't believe he did it. And I was like, man, I was like, bro, I'm actually very pro Second Amendment, man. And I supported Bernie Sanders because I think old people and all people deserve health care. I don't see how those things are separate. You know, sorry I didn't vote Trump because he's not qualified. And then the next thing you know, this guy's coming back. And it's only within a few and you know it's coming. Mm-hmm. Racist shit. And that's when you're just like, man, I really just want to shoot you in your fucking face.
Second Amendment. I don't
like people to bring that out of me because what I understand about you is that you really are what makes this world more fucked up because you need to feel superior to someone in order to feel good about yourself. So that shit fucks with me because I know that that's not trolling. That's not, you're expressing a view you would never express sitting across this table from me.
Right.
And even if we did in a civil argument without the threat of violence or anything, you couldn't handle that debate in real life.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't be willing as an American willing to take a DNA test to see what's in you for real because it will shatter the mythology of white Anglo-Saxon Protestant that you need in order to feel human when you could just feel like a human being. So that type of stuff bothers me because I understand that we really could get rid of those things in 20 years, just with ratifying the education system and making sure that people interacted with people who didn't look like them. So that disturbs me because I know it's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
But the other shit doesn't bother me. You know, if you talk shit about my kids and wife, I get tiffed a little, but I'm probably going to go to your page, see your kids and wife, and I'm going to have a field day. I'm going to have a field day on that fat bitch. You know what I mean? So you can definitely count on me arguing with people, but then I get bored and it's just done. You know, it's like, okay, that was a nice 15 minutes. I'm going to go back to not having a job. I know you got to get back off lunch. You know what I'm saying?
Did you see Charles Barkley talk to Richard Spencer on his Solving Race show?
No, the only way I can still like Barkley, even meaning down to the shoes you're wearing, which are some of my favorite Nikes.
Yep.
Is not to listen to him
because
Barkley is from Alabama and my family's from Alabama and God bless their soul. You got a few types in Alabama, but he's the type I don't like. Like, it ain't just because motherfuckers wearing their pants around their ass, Chuck. You know, I'm sorry, Chuck. And no matter how hard we try to be respectful, and you know, there are going to be some people who disrespect us just because, like the people I was just talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but I got to watch Chuck's thing, but I just don't often for him to be a hero of mine. Sometimes I don't like to hear him talk on race. Him and Karl Malone, I'd rather not hear talk on race because they're not going to talk from an honest place. Like, if I want to hear someone talk on race, I want to hear Shannon Sharp, I want to hear Deion Sanders, because they're going to find a middle ground where everything black people say ain't 100%. You know, sometimes, all right, you'll get an overreaction, but Shannon Sharp or Deion is going to be able to put that in the context of, well, this is why the overreaction happens versus fucking Chuck. It's just like, oh, man, all young black men are fucking crazy. Right. It's like, oh, God damn, Chuck. As you standing in a pair of his fucking shoes.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so. I haven't, but how was it?
I watched, there's like a 2-minute clip that's up on Twitter or something, and I feel like it's a disappointment to not challenge Richard Spencer, who is a Nazi, on his views, and to just be like, well, what you're saying is sort of out there. You know, you don't actually, like, really go in on him and be like, no, your whole idea of humanity is fucked.
Why? But my thing is, like, is Chuck qualified to do something?
No. Of course not.
You know what
I'm
saying? Chuck is just like an old country man from a cultural standpoint that's mad that younger generations are a little more adventurous in terms. So he ends up saying some shit that lends itself to Spencer sometime, unfortunately. Right. But if Spencer's going to get an interview again, give me Shannon Sharp. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Give me someone who is not only has been a great athlete, but definitely in terms of an intellectual level, it's brilliant enough to really get to the point. Because in a sense, like, all Richard Spencer or any fucking white nationalist is saying is that I want this shit to be all white.
Yep.
And that lends itself to how did we get here to all white?
Right.
Which means we have to acknowledge genocide. We have to acknowledge slavery. We have to acknowledge motherfuckers. We all here by serendipity or accident. This ain't a grand plot. And there's an evil in that you can point out when you go at it from an honest perspective versus trying to say, you know.
Right.
Gingerly go around it and hope he says something provocative. But I think TV's fucked up now.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fucked up you can't say nigger on TV. Mm-hmm. I think because when you look at All in the Family, you look at the Jeffersons, you're looking at much more socially challenging TV than the shit we get now. When you're watching Planet of the Apes via the 1960s, this Planet of the Apes, the fucking sci-fi is amazing. The class and storyline that you had 40 years ago,
right,
gone.
Right.
This is more of for vegans and people who don't want to see animals, and I get that too. But while we're doing that, the original Planet of the Apes really taught you about class in a different way. Mm-hmm. So I just think TV's gotten pretty pussy overall.
Mm-hmm.
So who better to do something with Richard Spencer than fucking Chuck or Karl Malone?
We have
Barkley's never going to shake my hand.
We have,
but I do love you, Barkley. Like real G shit.
But would you shake his hand?
I'd shake Barkley's hand because parts of Barkley are admirable, and they're what, again, my family's from Alabama, so I understand them too.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like parts of the hard work concept, the not making excuses, that shit is for real.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the most vehement of racist societies, there is room to succeed and prosper. And there's a group of people called Jewish people for the last 10,000 years. They've really been getting the fucked into the stick on a lot of shit, and they have managed culturally because they insulated themselves and they worked their ass off and they endured things to thrive in places where others could not and would not have. And I often tell people, like, I look at culturally other groups of people and how they've been able to kind of survive it, including black people in this country, and that's to be applauded. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, some things that are out there we can take from other successful groups just as a people. We can stop all the infighting. You know, like, I don't have to hate Uncle Chuck and not fuck with him to disagree with him.
Mm-hmm.
I just fucking disagree with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I hate you.
Right.
But I think that I would shake his hand because I think that anyone who makes it out of rural Alabama, anyone who makes it into the NBA, has his money afterwards, a successful man, hates on young black men a little too much, even though he's no Jason fucking Whitlock.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's to be applauded because that's something I can tell my 14-year-old upstairs. If you really apply yourself, this is the possibilities, and not just with a basketball.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you can do this like your parents wanted them to be. Learned. They understood that math can make you fucking money.
Yeah.
And a liberal arts degree in fucking screenwriting may not.
But I feel like people just go into physics for the pussy, you know?
Yeah. All that fucking, what's that new Janelle Monáe movie, the one they won the movie?
Hidden Figures.
Hidden Figures.
Yeah.
Shouts out.
Yeah.
We have a song called Sugar High with Currency and Smoke Dizza, and with all due respect to you, those two guys might light up more than anybody we know.
Those are the homies. I smoke with them. Absolutely.
Yeah. So the song is obviously like our drug of choice. It's sugar, and we wanted to get those guys to really spit in a very, like,
you know, drugged out way.
Yeah, and, like, they did it.
Yeah.
Who are the, I mean, besides Snoop, besides Currency, besides
yeah, who smokes as much as you?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I've smoked with Snoop, who complimented my wife's fucking joint rolling ability.
Congratulations.
Shouts out to Shay. Currency, me and him last time we smoked, we were in his crib. The whole crew was smoking. They start taking dabs. That scares me because it reminds me of the crack era. But
right.
I dabbed because I was with the homies Currency. And at the end of the night, it was just me, him, and his dogs awake. And everybody else was fucking out of it. I Who else? Smoke. Me and Diz at the Sweet Chicks Cafe. Shouts out to Sweet Chicks. That's over in
Did you go Lower East Side? Yeah.
When it opened, me and Smoke were in the back with other folks just lighting up the fucking kitchen, smoking in that mug. Well, in the back of the kitchen. I want health inspectors, evil motherfuckers. But we are
all, I mean, it's Nas's restaurant, so I think you're good.
Yeah, we were all lit. You know what I mean? I smoked with Nas a couple weeks ago. I don't know, man. My wife is my favorite person to smoke with. That's who I'm constantly.
Congratulations again.
By the way, I thought you were just going to stop at, like, he's my favorite person. Like, yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, in terms of smoke out, man, you'd be hard-pressed to smoke as
Wiz?
Much as... me and Wiz haven't smoked there. We've been in the same room smoking.
Mm-hmm.
But,
Titty Boy?
Me and Tit have smoked, of course. But Ray Murray and Big Boy. Ray Murray from Organized Noise and Big Boy. When you walk in the studio, just a random time, you walk in the studio. Name it.
3 o'clock.
Three in the afternoon.
Yeah.
You're in the studio.
Yeah.
You're going to leave the studio 3 the next morning. There's going to be a joint in the air the entire time you're in the studio. And that's a hell of a way to be making music, brother. So I would say in terms of the most fucking around with Ray and Big.
Yeah.
You'll smoke. Big will sit there and roll 28 joints. I roll gram joints. Each one of my joints is about a gram.
Mm-hmm.
He probably rolls about 0.7. So if he rolls... He rolls 40 joints. You're going to walk out of there having smoked about 30, 35, so close to an ounce in a setting. My wife and I average an ounce every 3 days. So.
And what is the snack of choice for you?
Oh, man. Well, it used to be food I like. Now it's fucking suja and water. Well, I like the suja, too, but I'm just saying. It used to be like the Waffle House. Now I'm drinking fucking suja and some goddamn purified.
So, all right, this album is coming out on Friday. What do you do typically around, like, a new album release? Is it relief for you that you put out something that people haven't heard yet?
I mean, you're just nervous. You want them to hear it, which is why me and Elle just keep leaking our shit. Like, yo, fuck the company.
What advice do you have for
somebody who's dropping your debut album? Oh, man. Let me see. If I was Joe Buttons, what I would have said. You got a 360 deal.
I don't know.
Why don't you know?
Actually, we're putting it out through our friends over at Empire. Shout out to John Master over there.
Okay.
But
that's just a distro deal.
What's that?
That's just a distro deal.
My thing is, I would look at the first album as a first year, not a first week. I would look at your first album as a first time, not the final time. I'd look at your first album as something fun, as an introductory handshake. And I'd already be working on my second album just in case this shit really, really works out. You
know what I mean? Do you like working in a duo, or do you want to go solo like maybe I do?
How does the fucking twin want to go solo? You're used to being with someone.
Tired of this shit.
Dan! Yo, I like being one half of Run the Jewels. Mm-hmm. I like, you know, even then when I drop Guest Verses, still of Killer Mike, one half of Run the Jewels. I like it. I prefer this because... You know, if you're happy, you have people to be a person and people to be happy with. And if you're sad, you're not by your goddamn self with your house full of guns.
Yo, thank you for having us in your house.
Man,
thank
absolutely.
You for being a part of this.
Absolutely. Not many people are allowed to come to my house.
Bernie Sanders.
Well, yeah, he's coming, but he's coming. Man, you guys are white. I'm going to tell you. My wife loves that shit. I'm here to tell you that. I was like, yo, we got some people coming by the house. She was like, the white boys. Like, she's like, oh, okay.
Oh, my God.
Well, if you're one of the homies, hey, you might have to beat up the screen.
Thanks so much, Mike.
Hey, man, love and respect, man.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to this new episode of A Waste of Time with It's the Real Jeff. If people want to find out more about us, if people want to find out more about this podcast, and most importantly, if people want to find out about our rap album, Teddy Bear Fresh, out in stores this Friday, May 26th, where can they go?
Can you believe that we are actually on all streaming services with our album? It is on Spotify, it is on iTunes, it is on Beats Music, it is on Google Play, so that the one guy in the comment section who keeps talking about Google Play, aka Alfie,
it's there.
It is there, and it is not getting removed, it is there. You can also go and listen to our podcast at soundcloud.com/A Waste of Time. You can listen to our music at soundcloud.com/It's the Real. We are also on Instagram at It's The Real, Facebook at It's The Real, Twitter at It's The Real. We are also on Snapchat at It's The Real and It's The Real Eric, because It's The Real was taken, and we will get that It's The Real back.
We're working on it, guys. Working on it. We like to shout out people to tell them to spread the word about our podcast, and we hope that you guys listen and hear your shout outs, because, you know, we think about these things. So shout out to you if we shouted you out. And this week, Jeff, who would you like to shout?
I want to shout out a long-time internet friend.
Okay.
Who we've never actually met because we have not been to Missouri, but shout out to Joshua Tank Thompson.
Yes.
Who started out in the non-right comment section with our friend Ray Rodriguez.
That's right.
And Ray the Hussein, excuse me.
Shout out to Ray.
And Joshua Tank Thompson and his wife and the whole family, everybody out there, shout out to all of them.
Appreciate
for sticking with us for basically 10 years.
Yeah, and keep spreading the word about It's The Real. I would like to shout out, first of all, everybody who is a part of Teddy Bear Fresh, from Greg Mayo on production to John Master and all the folks at Empire for distributing the album. I want to shout out Currency, Smoke Dizza, Bun B, Jazz Cartier, Michael Christmas, Tunji Ige, Angie Martinez, Combat Jack, Just Blaze, Scott Rogowski, Sway. Shout out to everybody who's been along for this incredible ride, listening to different mixes. Shout out to John Sparks for doing the mastering. Shout out to Ian Rex Arrow Wolfson for directing our videos. Shout out to everybody who's been fucking with the music and letting us know. And we will make sure, if you guys show us the receipts, we will make sure to shout you out. Teddy Bear Fresh, it's really out there. Unbelievable.
Wait, can I just say something? So I just shouted out, like, you know, a person who, you know, shouts to Joshua Tank Thompson for all of his support. But you just, like, so Eric and I, when we used to do red carpets, this one time we were interviewing Estelle, the singer from Great Britain.
Yeah.
And we asked her, hey, like, what are you here to promote? And she says, oh, I'm here to promote my new single, whatever it was.
Yep.
And we go, oh
yeah.
Well, we were here to promote world peace and end world hunger. But, you know, we can talk about your single.
That's fine. Yeah,
It sounds great.
Yeah.
But, you know, we really would have rather talked about the other stuff. And so we thought that was one of our best bits. And that's exactly how I feel right now when you are shouting out every single person that we should be thanking. And I'm just like,
you could have gone a different direction. You could have been like, shout out to the construction guys for not doing construction.
Yo,
right now.
But really, shout out to them.
Yeah, while it's raining outside and preventing them from doing the hammering.
They were hammering all day today. Like, that's not going to stop them.
This is the one thing. I was like, we had a very nice time down in Atlanta, and then it's like you get on that plane, it's like, oh no, tomorrow morning is just going to be rough.
Drilling outside my window.
Oh God,
buzzsaws. Welcome
guys,
to New York City.
Thank you for listening again for 2 years. It's been quite a run. We appreciate it. If you haven't checked out our first episode and then some, go back. Podcasts are forever.
Just like Cardi B said, podcasts are forever.
Not for real, for real.
Sure, sure.
Teddy Bear Fresh in stores. 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 We'll see you guys next week.